When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, I'm Grongy Maguire, and this is Chantel Fiduch and Pate.
Hello.
We bonded over our love of reminiscing about weird celebrity couples. The ones no one would believe happened if Google wasn't there to back it up.
We want you to join us as we remember when love was young, times were simpler, and we really thought that Angelina and Billy Bob Thornton were going to make it.
Every week, we're joined by a celebrity guest to discuss the showbiz romance they never got over. So take our hand and stroll down memory lane with us as we remember
the way they were.
Hi, Chantel.
Hi, Grania. How are we?
I'm very well. Halloween is coming. I'm very excited.
Do you have any ideas for... Are you a costume person? We've discussed this before, but remind me.
I'm very ambitious, theoretically.
Okay.
When it comes to actually doing it, I always then get very resentful when I actually have to buy anything. And I always think, oh, for God's sake, and I'm going to wear this once. But I do like Halloween. And my favourite thing about Halloween is reminding people that yep. is, it's an Irish festival and not American. Yep.
That's how I know that we've discussed this before, is I've just remembered that I think we've done this twice. I think this is the third time now where we've discussed that Halloween is an Irish festival. But I think you've often said that Ireland invented it and Americans perfected it, I think is where we ended up on. So we both take ownership of that.
Yeah, like Joe Biden, we created him and then you perfected him.
Like the Kennedys.
Exactly. There's a reason why.
How do you feel about purchasing Halloween costumes? Because I'm very much like Halloween costumes should be something that you pull together. Anyone can go buy a Pirates of the Caribbean costume. There's no skill in that. The skill is if you can pull together a Pirates of the Caribbean. I would never do that. But you know what I mean? If you have some scarves around, make some trousers look like that with the help of tight socks. You know what I mean? That's a costume I appreciate. How do you feel about store-bought costumes?
I think they're so lame and so embarrassing. And I'll tell you, next level, what I saw this week, somebody on Facebook is doing a clear out and they're selling the really expensive Halloween costumes that they bought from like 5 years ago. They've got this Jon Snow costume that they're selling.
Oh, that is so, everything about that sentence, they have a Jon Snow costume, just makes me want to die. Whatever the character is from the TV show of that year, that is the worst costume idea. And to purchase one for three figures, do not do this. Niche, that's the key, niche. Mm-hmm. It should be a detailed thing that only a few people go, oh yeah, now I see it. That's the best kind of costume.
Yeah, any costume that gets a, oh yeah, reaction is a good one.
That's the dream one. Right, so we've sorted that out. Onto the show, Grania.
Well, you know who I always say, oh yeah, babe.
Oh, good one. That was one of your best, you know. That was one of the best.
Thank you. The spirit of Dermot O'Leary just took over my body. It is our guest. She is gorgeous. She is smart. She is funny. She is amazing. I know her as a legend. You know her as Callie Beaton.
The way they were.
Hi, Callie.
Hi, Grania. Hi, Chantel.
Hi, Callie. How are you? Thanks so much for being here.
It's a real pleasure. It's lovely to be seeing you. Looking very glamorous.
Thank you. I try. Yeah. Please tell our listeners that. It's a visual medium.
I cannot even tell your listeners how gorgeous you both look. I think that's what this podcast is most known for. It's just the gorgeousness
Guys,
of its hosts.
We're topless, let's just say it. Callie loves it.
Can't get enough of it.
Speaking of romance... and we're already in there. Callie, we consider ourselves a very romantic podcast. Mm-hmm. Do you consider yourself a romantic?
I'm a bit too romantic. I do find that I've sort of, or I've lived my whole life thinking that I'm in some kind of, I don't know what era it would be. I was a teenager in the 80s, so I'm probably quite 80s influenced. And I think, you know, Brooke Shields and Blue Lagoon, that kind of vibe.
Oh,
and obviously she and I look very similar.
And so literally can, spitting image.
Yeah, it's amazing. People always said
it's the hair mainly.
Yeah, the hair. So I think, I mean, I first fell in love when I was 14 with Nick Young, and I was in love with him for 2 years, and it was a really exciting, heady romance. And I think I've always been overly romantic and, in the words of Robert Palmer, addicted to love.
Wow. Nothing wrong with that.
So what did teenage Callie think? Romance. Like a really, like the perfect love story.
Well, it was, I used to listen, I'm not a Dire Straits fan, she said, in a way that made it highly suspicious. Because why do people start with a sentence like that? But I loved that Romeo and Juliet by Dire Straits. Mm-hmm. I love that. I still love that song. I love the lyrics. And I know I keep mentioning Nick Young, but it was that era. I got to know that song with him. And I just think, I thought life was about romantic songs, romantic movies, sort of the excitement. I lived in rural Dorset. The nearest you would get to excitement by some margin was drinking cider, smoking a bit of weed and snogging a boy. That still sounds like a good time.
Sounds like a sonnet.
But so I just think, for me, it was just always escapism. You know, I was just, I wasn't happy at home. So I wasn't happy in my own skin. So I was like, let me get into the skin of someone else. This would be cool. So I just fell in love after love after love after love and had, I've just always fallen in love in a sort of serial love way.
I love that song. I love that song so much. And when I was a teenager, I loved it too. And it's that whole like, oh, it's so tragic, you know, Juliet, you know, when we made love, you used to cry. It's all like, oh, it's doomed, but it's fabulous because I doomed it.
Bittersweet and all serenading up on balconies. And and also, it's just, it's lovely. And it's obviously totally unrealistic as we get older and we realise that. But I just remember spending hours and hours listening to sort of romantic songs. I remember Nick Young writing, he bought me a Rolling Stones album on vinyl, obviously, when I was, I don't know, 15, so 1984. And he wrote a Shakespearean sonnet all around the edge of the inner of the sleeve in his lovely, scrawly Nick Young writing.
What happened to Nick Young? Where is this person?
I just have to tell you what happened to Nick Young. And I hope he is listening, because Nick Young resurfaced. So Nick Young resurfaced some years ago on Facebook with I won't say what his full name is, but he's now got a double-barreled surname. So Nick, then two parts to his surname.
And Nick, not so young.
Nick getting quite old. And he appeared, he sent me a Facebook friend request. I didn't know who it was. And then I looked at it and he was the boy that everyone wanted to snog at school. He is a devastatingly attractive adult man.
Oh,
I
damn
was
it.
Like, wow, my first
age like a fine
he's
wine.
He's aged well. I think he might be quite the mess emotionally from the few bits I gathered on.
The best looking ones always are.
Yeah, deep social media dive did lead me to some answers to some questions. But and then he disappeared again. But I mean, fully disappeared off social media, leaving little footprint.
Wow.
Maybe he's a spy.
Should we do an episode about this guy instead of the couple.
Yeah, I think me and Nick Young could be this episode, to be fair.
Literally, I'm into it.
So when you said Nick Young, I fell in love with Nick Young. In my head, I was like, oh, that must be like an 80s pop star.
Yeah, I thought that at first as well. I was like, no, that's Paul Young.
Like
it's
Nick
not
Kershaw.
Paul Young.
No. It was actual Nick Young,
Oh, well, speaking of getting better with age, your couple are a vintage. But as always, little Chantelle, look at that beautiful little face. No, she's no idea who we're even talking about. She doesn't
Chantelle,
know.
How old are you? 7?
I know, I'm just so teeny tiny.
Because they did get together quite a long time ago.
Chantelle, I can tell you that our couple got together in 2000. 2001.
Okay, okay, I'm in.
A quiet year, a quiet year. I can tell you, just to set the scene, what was going on. 2001, Wikipedia is launched. Billie Eilish is born.
Oh my God.
Yes. Hold on, I need to get a drink. Hang on. Sorry, I need to go lie down for a second.
And the world reels from the tragedy unfolding on our TV screens. That was, of course, the launch of 2 pints of lager and a packet of crisps, please.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the only thing that happened in 2001. Because she went from Queen of the Corsets to the Corpse Bride.
Oh my God. So it's Helen Bonham Carter. And is it Tim Burton? It must be Tim Burton. Oh my God. Our generations, Mia Farrow and Woody Allen living in separate houses. Yes. Oh, I love it. Let's get involved.
Yes.
Been waiting for them. Oh, this is going to happen.
I genuinely was worried. I was like, that's just one clue. I genuinely was thinking, oh, maybe I need, but I couldn't think of any more clues, but why?
I mean, that's a goodie. If you haven't got it from that, I think you need to just get off the podcast, find something else to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, good choice, Callie.
Oh, it was when Grania mentioned the podcast, she hadn't even finished the sentence. I was like, I've got my couple.
That's the kind of thing we want. That's the dream guest we want. Somebody
I knew my couple.
So, of course, Callie, you were talking about the director Tim Burton and his marriage to the British actress Helena Bonham Carter. But when did you first come upon them as a couple? Why do they matter to you?
Well, they matter to me because they are contemporaneous. Well, she's a little bit older than me, but not a lot older than me. He's obviously older than anyone else in the world. But she's my kind of age. She also, our worlds sort of overlap a bit. Not as much as I'd like them to in my pretend life.
Here we go.
But I worked with a family member of hers for some time. I grew up, my 20s were populated by watching her and stuff. And she also, that the infamous two houses is in a 1930s, an Art Deco block very near where I live. So I became aware of them. And I've got a friend who's very good friends with Tim Burton. So I felt like I was orbiting around, but only because I live around here and I'm ancient. So you could just name any sort of fairly old person in North London, from a dustman to an A-lister, and I probably have some connection. So I sort of was very aware of her, partly on screen and partly in the neighbourhood. I remember her kids are considerably younger than my kids, but a bit younger. And I remember when Jake, my first, who's now 26, I used to ride up and down England's Lane. I've got a vintage Vespa, and that was a route that I used to go to take. I can't remember where I was taking the kids, but I used to, and I had a special little thing built on the back of the Vespa so the kids could go on the back. And Jake, when he would have been about 3, and I remember riding my vintage Vespa along England's Lane in Belsize Park, and she lived just off there, and she would see us quite often. I must have been doing that journey similar time to her, and she would always like wave, and she loved the Vespa. So I feel like what I'm trying to say is we're really best friends.
Best friends, yeah.
Really best
friends. So you feel
friends.
Like you have, a, so you have an insight into this because
really
you were
close.
There when they broke up.
She would pick me. If you said, do you want to come on the podcast? She'd be like, I'd like to pick Callie and her kids.
Callie
dad.
And Nick Young.
And Nick Young, yeah. But yeah, I just always felt that sort of, and I was fascinated. Also, as sort of women our kind of age, I don't think people realise, sorry, the dog's just come in. I don't think, my current love, I don't think people realise how, it was so unusual for a female actor to be as she was. So she didn't conform to sort of stereotype of looking conventional. She was very unconventional and enormously talented and had a bit of a fuck you, this is how I'm going to do it thing, which let's not underestimate. When she was starting out and taking big roles in the 90s, that was not what women were doing on screen. So I also think let's give her a moment, give her her credit as breaking through some glass ceilings on behalf of lots of us.
Can I interject before Grania gets into the history that I'm going to guess that the reason she had that fuck you attitude is because she came from fuck you money. So she could very much afford to be like, I'm going to dress the way I want to dress. I don't need this job.
That's true. Although it can go either way, can't it? You can really conform when you come from money, or you can rebel in a fake rebel way, but actually you're just as unrebellious. And I think, I mean, yeah, she went to sixth form with Adam Buxton and Louis Theroux and all that lot. She went to Westminster School, which in sixth form is a co-educational school. And you can sort of tell she's from that group, you know. But when you hear her talk about those school days, you know, she didn't, I think she always felt like she didn't belong anywhere. And that's probably the other reason I love her. She didn't feel too good for anything. She was like, I don't really know how to belong, so I'll make a virtue of not belonging. And what an amazing role model that is for any of us.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention the bone structure.
There you go, the bone structure and the boned corsets. What a combo.
Honestly.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt you because somebody has just thrown a brick through my window.
Literally a brick.
Literally a brick. Wow. And scrawled on the brick, they've just written, but what about their star signs?
It happens every week now.
Oh, I bet it does. Isn't that uncanny?
Well, I can tell you, Helena, May 26th, Gemini.
Oh, okay.
She's a Gemini gal. Tim, August 25th. Uh-oh, he's a Leo king.
That's the same birthday as my son. I didn't know that.
Wowzer. Well, pay attention then. You're about to hear a lot about Leos.
Okay, I'm going to try and cross-apply this between Burton and Beaton.
Burton and Beaton. So, Gemini, Helena and Leo, Tim, have so much fun that it could make the rest of the zodiac envious.
Oh my God.
They both consider their best day spent in laughter. Their main challenge is the difference in their approach to change, and they both need to make room for small adjustments in their behaviour if they want their relationship to last. Leo, Tim, will need to make room for more movement and understand what seems to be flakiness of their changeable Gemini, Helena partner.
Sounds like her.
While Gemini, Helena, will have to understand that Leo, Tim, is in fact keeping them together for however long they're meant to last. Their mutual respect can usually overcome any boundaries, and they should keep having fun and building their relationship on a solid foundation of childish joy. Okay, Callie, what percentage do you think, according to their zodiac signs, this match has of working? What do you think?
Well, I guess, spoiler alert, we kind of know the outcome, but we also know that it did really work when it worked. So I think everything you described is what I would like to think was the case. And actually, they speak about that, especially she speaks about that quite fondly now. So I think it's pretty bang on. And maybe if you don't believe that relationships are for life, which I know is contentious, but if we imagine that there are a series of lovely things that we may not regret but don't last forever, maybe they were meant to be.
So yeah, we need a number, Callie.
We need a number.
8%. I'm going to go with everything Callie said, but I'm going to give them a high number because I very much agree. I think they were a successful pairing, I would say. I'm going to say 92%.
Oh, it's percentages, 80%.
Yeah. Oh, 80%. Yeah. Okay. You were doing out of 10.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm not just a low marker.
I thought it was really odd after everything you said. You're like, 8%, fuck them. Yeah, I was like, okay.
No, 80.
80, okay.
Well, Callie, you came very close because according to their astrological charts, this match had an 82%.
There you go.
She nailed it.
Nailed it. I know these people like I've lived with them. And they didn't even live with each other.
You have.
They didn't live together, but I was there joining them.
You're ferrying between both houses.
I was right there with them.
You were on your little Vespa outside, pushing in.
Just making sure they came to no trouble.
So let's have a look at their emotional CV before they met each other. So Helena Bone Carter, she was born in Islington, London. So her father came from a very prominent British political family. He was a merchant banker. Her mother, psychotherapist. So her paternal grandmother was a politician and feminist, Violet Bohm Carter, who was the daughter of Lord Asquith, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom.
My goodness.
Good genes, okay. Good legacy.
Yeah.
She was so fancy. Princess Margaret was a family friend.
Oh my God.
I mean, we can all say that, can't we?
It sounds like a euphemism, doesn't it? Like Princess Margaret was a family friend.
Yeah.
Like a code word for get me out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Code word for alcoholism in the family. Yeah. Well, yeah. Princess Margaret was a family friend.
We're still using that.
But listen, it was not all tiaras and cocktails for Helena Bohm Carter growing up. when she was 5, her mother had a series of nervous breakdowns, which took years to recover. Then her dad was diagnosed with acoustic neuroma. He suffered complications after an operation and then had a stroke and then ended up in a wheelchair. Her brothers were at university, so Helena Bonham Carter was left to cope with all of this by herself.
Okay, I take back what I said about good stock.
Yeah, see? All these posh ones are very flawed. They give with one hand, they take it with the other.
Yeah, seriously.
There's a lot going on at home. She said from this period, I remember thinking, well, I have a choice. I can either be sad or create my own reality by acting. Fantasy is much easier than real life.
Oh, wow. Ain't that the truth? To haunt you.
So, Kelly, I'm sorry. I'm seeing real passions between you and Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah, definitely.
What do you know about Kelly's parents?
Well, the weird thing is, because it's interesting, she went to a boys' school and it was predominantly boys still when she went to it. And I was, as you may know, I was educated in a boys' school from when I was 7 because my parents taught there. And it was an incredibly privileged private school. So I was mixing with the kids of film stars, royalty, but we had no money. I was in that school because my parents taught there. So mm-hmm. It was literally like the Oliver Twist of and the wrong gender. I was the wrong gender and the wrong class and of the wrong economic background. Apart from that, I fitted right in. It fitted me like a glove. So I do really understand that idea of just absolutely not belonging and sort of like, and then you attach yourself to a different version of yourself on stage, a version you can be in love. I very much relate to, I think I'm Helena Bonham Carter without the talent and the bone structure. I think that's pretty much it.
Just the money.
No, I didn't even have the money. We just had the sort of poshness. I was just in a posh world, but for no good reason.
Well, so like Callie, like you, she's ambitious. She's hardworking. At the age of 16, she decides, right, sod this. I'm going to pursue a career as an actor. She starts appearing in ads, and by 18, she's filming A Room With You.
I remember that, and I loved the book. And I loved her in the film.
I had no idea she was that young. That's wild.
Yeah.
So she's 18. But interesting enough, she carried on living at home with her parents.
Well,
so she's
clever.
Now a famous film actress. She's still living at home with her parents. She later explains she felt if she remained a child, it would somehow make up for what happened to her parents.
Mm-hmm.
She's very protective of them.
Yeah.
So she ends up, she just lives at home until she's 30.
Oh my God.
That's where we differ.
Yikes. Did she literally move out of the home with her parents into the home with Tim Burton? Into the home next
yeah,
to the
far off. Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Because even then, when she did finally move out when she was 30, she only moved down the road.
Because they were all local to here. They were all a Belsize Park.
I remember that. Yeah. Jesus.
Park. Yeah.
Helena, spread your wings, sweetheart. Yeah. Cut the
Mind
cord.
If you,
live
in that area, why move? I mean, that's the area we spend our lives trying to afford. And she was just right in it.
It's true.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So, quite sheltered. She's literally still living at home with her parents. From this period, the only big relationship we know about was with a little boy. You may have heard, little Kenny Branagh.
Yes.
Of course.
Kenneth Branagh on the set of Frankenstein.
Was this pre-Emma Thompson and Kenneth Branagh?
Well, you would know if you listened to our Kenneth Branagh and Emma Thompson podcast. We did about them as a couple.
So it was after.
Yes. And some would say there maybe was a slight overlap.
Yes, I did wonder.
I think Emma Thompson would say that.
Yeah.
So let's just leave her She's down the road from her mum and dad. She sat in her little kitchen. She's sad. She's just broken up with Kenneth Branagh. So let's leave little Helen there and let's go across. Let's fly across the Atlantic Ocean to a little country called the United States of America and find out what's the story with Tim Burton. So he grew up in California. I think his parents were quite eccentric because his mother, Jean, would go on to own a cat-themed gift shop.
Nice.
And his dad, Bill, was a former minor league baseball player.
Oh. Oh, so it's all very as well. That's so good. A minor.
Well, so no one can really prove that wasn't the case because it's not good.
Yeah, exactly.
Just say what you like if it's minor league.
That's great. Yeah. A minor league baseball. There's so you just told a whole life story in three words there.
Say what you like.
There's so much there.
It's a real American short story, isn't it?
It really is.
It's like John Irvin's come into play.
So he studies animation at university. Then when he's quite young, he gets married to Lena Jezecki, a German-born artist.
Exciting. Golly. That's a passionate romance, isn't it?
Yeah.
So they get divorced in 1991 after 4 years of marriage. Then he will go on to meet model and actress Lisa Marie.
Oh yes, I forgot that episode.
So she becomes like his big muse.
Yeah.
She's like his first
muse. Yeah.
And she was gorgeous. She looked really striking, like a really gorgeous like 30s film star.
Yes.
She had a great face. They start going at 1992 and she, and this is going to be a theme for Tim. She then appears in lots of his films. She's in Sleepy Hollow. She's in Ed Wood. She's in Mars Attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Tim is this like super cool Hollywood director, Helena Bonham Carter. She is sat in her kitchen, eating beans on toast, going, oh God, I've been dumped by Kenneth Branagh. Can you imagine?
I can imagine.
So she gets a phone call. She's on her holidays. She gets a phone call from Tim Burton. He's making Planet of the Apes.
That's right, Planet of the Apes.
Okay. Oh my God, that's where they met. I forgot about this.
He's making Planet of the Apes. He rings up and Helena says, he said, don't take this the wrong way, but you're the first person I thought of to play a chimpanzee.
What a opening what an opener.
Perfect.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's got form, hasn't he?
So Helena, I thought he's never met me, but he's got me. He's got
That's
me.
Not what I'd think, but good on
you. I've been waiting
so
for a man to say that my whole life.
Exactly. What a nice woman.
But then Helena continues, but he said, I've got this funny intuitive feeling that you like to cover up. And I said, you're completely right.
This is a quite intense
I think
phone
it's
call.
Also like it's kind of obvious when someone has all that sort of gothic, she literally would go around in veils and corsets and being otherworldly. I think we all could see she liked to cover up. Like, good
I
idea.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Hi, Helena. So I have a crazy idea that you're a bit kooky.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God, you get me.
So they start working on the Planet of the Apes. This is what Lena says. Remember, he is still going out with poor old Lisa Marie. Mm-hmm. She's actually in the film. Lisa Marie is in Planet of the Apes.
I bet he didn't cast her as a chimp.
She doesn't like to cover up.
No, she does not.
She doesn't like
not
to.
Not in the least.
So Helena said about working with him on Planet of the Apes, he's very shy and I was dressed as an ape all the time, so we didn't really collide.
We've all been there. Classic boy meets girl.
That old sentence.
The first conversation we had, which was pretty much the only one throughout the film, was about Hampstead.
There you go. All roads lead to Hampstead.
Same.
Apparently he told her it's the only place he felt he truly belonged.
Well, that's really a first world problem, isn't it?
But seriously, who talks like this? Hampstead? Oh my
Even
God.
Even if I thought that, I wouldn't be articulating it aloud.
Thank you, right?
So there's sparks, there's vibes. There's so much sparks and vibes that, and again, it basically with this relationship, it's just, it's basically what we can cleave from interviews with Helena Bonham Carter. There's not that much Tim doesn't really talk about.
He doesn't go on record with anything really, does he?
Yeah, it's very true.
But what I can tell you is who was really pissed off by this. Poor old Lisa Marie.
Yeah. Oh, God, she had a few things to say.
Was this before she went off with Michael Jackson?
No, it's not Lisa Marie Presley.
Oh, no, it's other Lisa Marie. It's Lisa Marie. I'd like it to be Lisa Marie Presley.
Oh, my God.
That'd be amazing.
Wouldn't that be a good intrigue?
That I would buy that memoir.
100%.
I would write that memoir.
From the creator of Scissorhands to actual Scissorhands. So, poor old Lisa Marie, she's been dumped by Tim Burton for Helena Bonham Carter. So, as a way of... Because she said that he had this sort of... He promised her that he would look after her financially for the rest of her life. And then she sort of claims that he kind of reneged on his promise.
That's a big statement to say.
So, to kind of... get her dues in other ways, she organized a big auction of all Tim Burton stuff.
I remember reading that's about how you this. Do it. Yes, and that's some good stuff, it. Isn't it, as well? Distinctive.
Don't get angry, get everything.
Yeah. Well, poor old Lisa Marie, she got her little trestle table out. She had all the Edward Scissorhands memorabilia ready to go.
Wow.
But then Tim Burton's people came in and quietly... all the stuff back.
So she's still got some money because I guess they put in some decent dollarage for that.
Yeah.
So we salute Lisa Marie as she leaves our narrative because now it's all about Tim and Helena. So they walk the red carpet for the first time for the premiere of Planet of the Apes in 2001. And then a few years into dating, Helena finds out that Tim had actually made a sketch of her 10 years before they had met.
This is where I would leave. I'd get all my stuff and go.
What?
He had drawn a sketch of her 10 years before they met.
Wow.
As a chimp or just as a muggle?
How would you feel, Kelly? How would you feel if you're like somebody's like flirting with you and being like, yeah, I want to see you dressed up as a monkey?
I can answer this question. Not so much the monkey. No one's asked me to dress up as a monkey yet, but I'm only 54 and I live in Hope. But I do. A guy that I was seeing very casually sent me a picture. He was like doing it with his work. He was traveling around the place. And then he sent me a picture, like a picture he took on his phone of a sketch he'd done of me. That was really intricate. And I was like, I do not want to see you again. That was weird. It was weird.
So I
feel like I had my Mini Burton moment. And I was like, I don't want to see my Mini Burton again.
God, you really are so connected to this couple, Kelly.
Aren't I? He wasn't called Tim, though. He wasn't called Tim.
As far as you know. I mean, who knows?
And he was, I think, in the States. He was American, actually, this guy. He was American.
So if you think about Helena, though, so she's very... I was going to say closeted. That's not the word. She's very sort of protected. She's been living with her parents till she was 30 years old. Her only previous relationship was with her director,
yeah,
who's a position of power. Now she's met Tim Burton, also a director, position of power.
Was there a big age gap between
them?
It's a
decent age gap, isn't there, between them? It's like 12 years, something like that.
12 years. He's 12 years older than
That's
her.
Also one of my favourite age gaps. I very often dated with a 12 or 13 year age gap.
Another connection. Very here we connected. Go. I think by the end of this episode, Kelly's going to actually be in a relationship with both Tim Burton and Helena Bonham Carter.
I am. And I'm going to do the remake of Room with a View.
And we're done.
Yeah.
Do you think it just felt comfortable for her? Maybe she, you know, because she had all that trauma when she was a teenager. Mm-hmm. She just sort of felt sort of reassuring to have somebody else in control.
As an older man lover, it's got tricky at my age, but it was fine. It was fine to a point. But I think it is. I'm still trying to unravel this for myself. But I think there is, I mean, obviously there's a bit of a sort of dad issue. If you go with someone who's as much older as that, that's a significant age, you know, age gaps, yeah, different music, different cultural references. And I still find it inordinately comforting. I find the company of older men very comforting. Not
same
funny.
As Helena.
Just sad.
Now that's a memoir title.
Listen, that's what every review I've ever had has said.
But I think older men, you know, with somebody like Tim Burton, he's got very sort of clear idea of who he is. his vision. Mm-hmm. He's very creative. He's very ambitious. That's very attractive.
Well, it's also that there's something about the introvert, the sort of slightly troubled introvert. So that's totally. Very appealing. We all think we're going to fix them, that they've only ever come out of their introvertism for us. And my friend Charlotte has a lovely way of describing people like Tim Burton who have that sort of introvert but look at me combo, which is reversing into the limelight. And
very well put,
And he made her feel seen by telling her she didn't like to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's very like he is Edward Scissorhands. So he's that like doomed, troubled, too sensitive for this world. And she's the Winona Ryder character, the beautiful girl who's going to save him. I mean.
Very much so.
It had to go that way. Is, everybody had their role.
Do we know whose idea it was to live in the separate houses?
Okay, so the big thing about Helena and Tim, the two most iconic parts of their relationship is their working relationship and, of course, their housing situation. Mm-hmm. So we've established she just moved down the road from her mum and dad. Luckily, the house next door to her house was available, so Tim moves in. So this is basically every interview with Timelina is basically
it's always about the houses. This.
Apparently hers, there was a communal door that connected the two houses.
Yep, I remember
hers
that.
Was girly. His was all gothic, containing skeletons and weird things and floor lights in neon shades.
Really? This sounds like made up.
It sounds like a teenage sounds like boy's someone bedroom. Imagined. No wonder she didn't get a piece of that.
Ugh. Did she just walk in and go, I'll get my own place?
Exactly. We'd all find a way to remortgage and fund that. Right. Fucking hell.
So apparently Helena's side was cozier. She had a fireplace. And apparently she kept her own bedroom and sort of kitchen. And then his side was all weird and obviously. And then when the kids came along, they kind of moved into Tim's side because there was more room.
Okay.
And they're messy children. I would always find a way to say, I think they're going to be best on your side. And then I'd get into my pristine little fireplacey, chintzy, lovely space. Knowing all the carnage was there. That would be lovely.
Now, I like how they describe like her places. Oh, her place was weird and cozy. She had a fireplace. Yeah. She just had a nice house.
Exactly.
She was a totally normal place.
Yeah.
I love like his side. It's like, you know, you're wandering into a Tim Burton film. And then her side is like, if the lighting changes, a different camera lens is used, it's suddenly like Merchant Ivory. She's got a cottage. She's got a little fireplace.
Yeah, and he's in a haunted house.
So in 2003, so 2 years after they get together, they have their first child, Billy Ray Burton.
Did they ever get married? Sorry to interrupt. Did they ever actually get married? They didn't, did they?
Well, you see, this thing, they talk about they splitting up and divorced, but nobody's ever sure if that was just the language
they used.
It was the language. Or if they ever.
I'm confident on this point.
You would know as
a close
family friend.
I would know as part of their intimate arrangement.
That's right. Yeah. She lived in the hallway.
Yeah, I was
houses.
In the communal area most days. And I assure you, I never saw evidence of a marriage.
Was it just you making some coffee and then Tim and Helena coming in and you go
just walk in? Oh, so Kelly, how's that Nick Young going?
Exactly. I never really fitted into either. I wasn't quite Merchant Ivory enough. I wasn't quite gothic enough. So they were like, you just stay in the hall, but just in between, as has always been your way.
So again, then we're back to more interviews about their bloody housing situation. This Melina says, after they had
the... emotional now. Now we've talked about tea in the hall. She's like, you speak my language.
I did not have room to house children. Put it that way. I lived in a cottage. I did always think, God, wouldn't it be ideal if Mr. Wright lived next door? Because then I'd have room to put all the bedrooms in. So that's what Tim's house is basically the family house, and I kept my bedroom and my kitchen.
Sounds dreamy.
It's not a bad... I've always thought I'd sooner do it the other way around. I've never lived with anyone since my kid's dad, and we split up 20 years ago. But I do have a very small shed painted like a beach hut in the garden, and I've always thought I wouldn't mind if there was someone I really fell for, if they lived in there. That would be okay. Yeah. But there's no way I'd have them living here. And I wouldn't give them the bigger house. They could have the little tiny weeny place.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And I will say it's got no plumbing, no electricity. It's literally a very small garden shed.
I can't. Why are you single?
I don't know. It's unfathomable. No one understands.
Please come live in my shed in the garden.
Yeah, that's 6 feet long. And I like tall men.
Tall older men who are
tall, old,
fragile to the elements.
Yeah, but it's very close to the soil, which I feel at a certain age is just very efficient.
Just keep on sinking.
And so this is, again, as she's talking about their house again, Helena. My house looks like something out of Beatrix Potter. But if you go over to his house, you're in a totally different place. He's got slime balls and dead Oompa Loompas lying about and skeletons and weird alien lights.
I'm beginning to wonder why she was with this guy.
We know, though, because he sort of reversed into her limelight.
That's right, that's right.
His side is messier, my side is cutesy, which is fine for him to visit, but there's no way he could live in it. He thinks his side is James Bond, but I have the kitchen and a fire, so usually we'll watch telly in my place. There is no normality in life. Having two houses means we get to get out of each other's hair, which, let's face it, we both have got quite a lot of.
Fair.
Good line.
See, everyone's a comedian, aren't they?
They got that from you in the hallway.
You gave them their best lines. But the sad thing is, I used to cite them as the kind of what I wanted to be.
I think everyone did. I think everyone did.
They were like the ones. And then I was totally. Like, ah. Oh. And also, how much do you have to hate someone you don't even live with and aren't married to divorce them? It's like you've almost no connection. How bad was it?
You're so right, though. I think they were literally like the cool girls. Yeah. Like, couple. Oh, that's what I don't want to live with a guy. I can just, and I think we did it as well because we kind of thought like, oh, it kind of makes us look like we're not clingy and we're not needy. Yes. And that's what guys will be into and stuff. But the sort of, there's elements of it I get, but I'm with you. The older I get, the more like, well, actually, I don't know. Like, it does sound a bit like, did you guys ever really get along that way?
No, to me it sounds great. I still think it's fantastic. I'm standing by the arrangement. All I would do, I wouldn't bother with a divorce or a public announcement. I would just brick up the connecting bits. I might reconfigure and put the bricking up a little further into his space. So I got a little bit of the space. And then I'd be like, I wish you well behind your brick wall. You may now exit via the gift shop instead of the communal area.
You'd slowly by slowly sort of divide the bill so he would suddenly get his own electricity bills, his own net, you know, his own TV license, and then...
Never his own fireplace, though, because that's a power move. He's never getting a fireplace.
Okay, well, we're already planning for their demise, but remember, in the world of our podcast, they are still very much together. She's living, she's knitting by her open fire. He's James Bonding with his dead Oompa Loompas. So we're in the empire phase of their relationship. So Callie, go on a little journey with us, if you will. It is the late 2000s. The phone's ringing. You know, it's just from up the bloody road. It's Selena Bone Carter saying, hey, Callie, we saw you outside on your Vespa bike. We're just wondering, would you like to go on a night out with me and Tim? We've got babysitter. Do you fancy a night out? So what do you think a night out with Helena and Tim would be like?
This is normally a question of fantasy, but in this case, it's
I'm
just
going to tell
Callie
you what we used to do.
Memory.
Every Tuesday night, I would go around to their house. And no, I think that what they would do is, I think there would be... I think I'm thinking like just a normal pub. I think at some point a normal London pub would figure 100%. In a very kind of like we're understated.
Totally
no, we
agree.
We don't think anyone's looking at us. What do you mean we're standing looking like Dickensian extras in the corner? Why is anyone noticed? Right. And then I think and so there'd be a bit of like we're just regular guys and girls. But then they would end up and I can't put these what the club, you know, the private members clubs like the Soho House for like the literary set. They'd end up in a sort of writers. Expensive, exclusive, subtle, you know, there's a dark door on a street hidden in Soho and they know the way in and then no one bothers them because that is the place they often are and that's Tim and Helena's table. So, and then, you know, obviously she would whip a toffee apple out of her handbag at a certain point because she doesn't like olives. And that would be, and then, you know, obviously because the babysitter is someone's niece off the school run, because at the end of the day they are just living a very sort of suburban life in Belsize
totally
Park
standard.
And the school run. They
old belly pain.
Yeah, they got to get back. So I don't think it'd be a late night. I don't think anyone's doing class A's. Couple of pints, a little bit of a pretentious chat in the corner of a basement in Soho, And and him dominating the entire evening through his silence.
I was just going to ask you what their dynamic was. And do you think she's the chitty chatty one, chatting to you and gossiping and such, and he's just kind of silently
he has all the power,
simmering,
in a sort of brooding. Like, yeah, there's a kind of like brooding male presence.
Interesting. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And all that kind of like, is anyone looking at me and his weird colored glasses? Yeah, that kind of thing.
And do you think how is she interacting with him? Is she humoring him? Is she pandering to him? Is she trying to get him to join in?
She's working hard to get him out of his shell and feeling quite responsible for the whole social dynamic. Yeah, and a kind of like unspoken, don't mind him, he often does that, it's okay.
Oh, he's a bit of a weird one, that one, Tim.
And yeah, it's the price you pay to be with a genius. And slightly losing herself and being eclipsed by this man, when really it should be the other way around, because the mighty Bonham Carter should never be eclipsed.
Yeah.
But I haven't thought about it.
Yes.
You know.
So he's sort of brooding, bit contrary. Oh, he's always like this when he's thinking about his next film. Oh, yes. That's Tim.
Making excuses.
Then home before it's the Northern Line finishes.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. I reckon, 11:25, everyone's in bed, but not in a fun way.
Yeah. Well, so this is what how she says they changed each other. So Helena said, again, this is, Helena is the one, she's our correspondent from this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
She said, he's made me more aware. He thinks I overact all the time. People who know him say I've changed him and I feel really flattered that I've made him talk more. Mm. He didn't really talk before. He's much shyer than me. Every sentence was unfinished. I used to say he was a home for abandoned sentences, but now he actually finishes them.
What progress.
Yeah, right?
Wow.
This seems like a lot of work coming from one
it
side.
It does. This is exhausting. I would want that unfinisher in a different house.
It's exactly what you had in your vision.
It is.
She also says, Tim says to take 7 things off before I go out. Coco Chanel said 1. Tim says at least 7 because too much is going on. But I hate being boring.
That was her after she took 7 things off.
Today, because it's a summer's day at my little kitchen table in Kentish Town. If I took 3 things off, I would be naked. So,
exactly.
Terrible advice for me on a summer's day.
Oh my God, like, what else did she have on?
She used to have always had about veils and top hats and
so
corsets
much.
And tuxedos and bustles and crinolines.
So she must have started with 47.
Yeah, there was a lot to go. A lot to go through.
So then 2007, they have their second child, Nell, but they carry on working together. So this is to give us a sort of a glimpse into what their working dynamic was like.
Mm-hmm.
She said, Tim asked me to have a meeting at his office. This was unusual, for at the time I shared a home with him and our 2 young children down the other end of the road from the office. So what was so important that he couldn't ask me over Cheerios? So he requests a meeting with her, even though they're living together.
Yeah.
So seated at his desk, he announced quite formally, I have something very important to ask you. So at this point, I thought he was going to ask me to marry him. But then he said, I wonder if you would consider playing the Red Queen in my film of Alice in Wonderland. And before I could respond, he shoved a sketch toward me. Look, it's got to be you because I've drawn you without intending to.
Oh, God,
and it was
again
with the drawing.
Again, bloody hell.
She said, it was a sketch of an overly large-headed, scowling queen. Frankly, this was better than a marriage proposal.
And better than a chimp, to be fair.
Yeah, much better. I was going to ask what kind of success they... Because the Planet of the Apes wasn't exactly a great start in terms of like them working together, because that film did pretty
they
badly.
They did well after that, though. They had some cool...
But after that, it was like one hit after another.
So here is a list of all the films they made together. Planet of the Apes, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Dark Shadows, Big Fish, Corpse Bride, Alice in Wonderland, Sweeney Todd.
So actually, towards the end was actually more successful than the beginning.
Although Big Fish, if you haven't seen Big Fish, I forgot about Big Fish. That was, oh my God, I watched that in LA and I wept for about a day.
Oh,
I loved
Callie,
Big Fish. I loved it.
It was like a family funeral.
We lived and breathed
that much.
It, all of us, didn't we? By the
point. Oh, same. The bit at the end when he's running with him and holding the chair.
Oh, I can't even.
It's, I don't actually remember her in it. I just don't remember her part in it. But I'm sure she was.
Okay, anyways. So you could say he was difficult and he was maybe, you know, a bit of hard work to live with, but he did transform her career.
100%.
He helped change the image that the public had of her being this porcelain merchant and ivory heroine to this, all these amazing, complex, different roles. So surely there's something very romantic, intoxicating about that. This somebody who's so brilliant in the field that you're so passionate about, seeing you and then giving you all these opportunities.
And that's controlling, coercive, and in a Cosmopolitan magazine quiz, big red flag. Big red flag.
And I would argue as well that that did happen 2 years before they met in a little film you may have heard of called Fight Club. Which, as much as I don't like that film anymore, yes, now, that did change a lot of people's opinions about Helena Bonham Carter.
That is very true.
That was a
good
massive
point.
Change.
Well made.
Thank you. So it wasn't down to Tim, it was her and David Fincher.
There you go.
So also, again, from Helena, she sort of describes how working with Tim could be difficult. So on the set of Sweeney Todd, which was coming, we're coming to the end of their time together, mm-hmm, she said that things were getting a little bit tense. So she said Johnny Depp was caught in the middle. So you
that
know things are
conundrum.
Bad.
once again,
I hate
Kelly
it when
can
that
relate.
Happens in a relationship.
But if a Johnny Depp is the one going, oh God, I think you two need to work it out.
Yeah, this looks a bit toxic, guys.
So she said, in the end, I realise I shouldn't really have any good ideas. If I have a good idea, I should give it to Johnny. If I gave it to Johnny, Johnny would mention it to Tim. And then it was a marvellous idea. If I mentioned it, it would be an absolutely crap idea. So we worked our way through it.
I knew that was coming. No. I bring you back to my coercive controlling point.
Mm-hmm.
In 2013, photos appear of
the mystery
Tim Burton
blonde
kissing a blonde woman after the screening of The Wicker Man.
That However, would get anyone going, wouldn't it? After a screening of The Wicker Man, everyone's like, oh, who can I snog?
Just a Nicolas Cage screaming, oh God, oh God. You know, it just
works for me every time.
And then a year later, December 2014, they announce their separation.
Yeah.
Did you ever find out who the blonde was?
She just always was a mysterious blonde.
Oh, took me ages to get the blonde out of my hair.
I was going to say, how long did it take you to get the red into the hair? What an amazing colorist ages. You have, Kelly.
So Kelly, I mean, they had everything. They had money. They had a career. They had two houses that were next to each other that were interconnected, but architecturally independent. You know, they were Hollywood's golden couple. Why couldn't they make it work? Why do you think Tim and Helena couldn't do last the distance?
Well, I think you just answered it with how he was on the set of Sweeney Todd. And also, and I didn't really like his behaviour about the Red Queen, to be honest, either. So I think really there's a lot of power in silence. The kind of the man with that, he's got the bigger house. He thinks he's James Bond, but actually he's Adam Ant. And it's just exhausting to be with. So I think he dominated her. He saw that she didn't like to be seen, and he made her be seen in some ways more. Like there she was with a massively high profile career and amazing films. But I think she got lost behind the mask. Mm. And I don't think he helped with that. I don't think she was in Sweeney Todd on set thinking, I feel empowered. I feel more of myself than I do without him. They say, don't they, the Buddhist principle, when you're looking at decisions to make in life, is a certain decision going to enlarge or diminish your life experience? And he was diminishing her, and she had to break free to enlarge herself and probably to enlarge her architectural footprint in the shared accommodation.
Yes. Well, so this is what she says about the split. She said, I could write a thesis on what happened, and it is all absorbing when a relationship breaks down, but I think we're coming through it, and I think we'll have something very precious still. Our relationship was always somewhat special, and I think it will always remain special. We did find each other, and really, the mark of a successful relationship shouldn't be whether you're there forever after. Sometimes you're not meant to be forever together. Sometimes you have to come to terms with the fact that that was it.
But that was a gift, a massive gift. We gave each other children and a lot more else. And we might be better and still be able to give to each other, but not necessarily living together. I mean, they never were living
they
together.
They never lived together.
We'd never lived together. Which we did, by the way. Oh, sorry. It's like she heard us. Because everybody seems to think
don't
we didn't, but we did.
It's okay.
Yeah, she is, right? You're the one that kept talking yeah, about it, sweetheart.
Pick a lane.
Then she carries on.
Pick a house.
We had a weird living arrangement, which now suits us fine.
We know.
That was your USP. That was it.
And it's really good because it hasn't caused much change for the children, which is our top priority. And we still operate as a family. So there you go. So they still work together on Alice Through the Looking Glass. Mm-hmm. She worked with him. As of 2019, so I presume they're still together, Tim Burton was dating Bond girl Ava Green.
Really?
In his fake Bond apartment.
Oh my God.
What a tacky
Ava,
move.
Sweetie.
That's the only thing that was authentic Bond about his entire abode was an actual Bond girl.
Wow. Oh my God. His house does sound, I just imagine the smell of his house is like a hamster.
And also, I bet really he's got like black linen or purple linen.
100%.
Like those duvet covers people had at university.
So much black and purple. He hasn't washed it in ages.
You can't see. And not even enough lighting to see when it was washed.
I just imagine whenever Helena came around, she'd sort of absentmindedly just start like doing the dishes and then be like, oh God, never mind, I'm going. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You sort of can't help yourself. And
she couldn't even take his dark sheets back to hers to put in the wash because it would ruin her Kath Kidston tea towels.
Of course.
Meanwhile, Helena has been dating Rye Dag Homebo.
Easy for
okay.
you to say.
I'm into it.
Which I'm assume is a real person, not just a load of Scrabble tiles people have just thrown on the ground. And he is 21 years her junior. She calls him magic.
Wowzer. Okay.
Tim carried on his passion of dating much younger people that he's
ingenues.
Ingenues. Whereas she's broken her passion. She's not going out with Kenneth Branagh, is she?
No.
She's got a little Rye Dag Homebo.
Listen, we all want one of those on a key ring.
Does it come with batteries? You have to buy your own separately.
It sounds like something you'd buy in, oh God, I can never remember. The Swedish furniture shop.
IKEA?
It sounds like something you'd buy in IKEA.
Yeah.
Imagine if I just said that.
Yes.
So, Callie, we have got now a penultimate question. Really, everything that this podcast is leading towards in every split, there's a winner, there's a loser. The one you're worried about, there's one you're happy for. In the great split between Tim Burton and Helena Bonham Carter, who thrived and who simply survived? Who won the breakup?
Sadly, but only because I think he's quite patriarchal underneath it. I think he's done fine because, and it is, it's hard as a midlife woman out and about in the world of love and romance. It's much harder. The odds are not stacked enough. I'm not feeling sorry for myself, but the odds are not stacked in our favour. So unfortunately, because of the power of gender, legacy, and that coercive man pretending to be silent because he didn't believe in himself, but actually having titanic self-confidence, she has been left shagging a man with the name of a souvenir from Cork Airport.
What an amazing couple. What a couple. What a moment. What a time. Callie, we've got one more question for you.
We do.
Release you into the night.
Back to the wild. Back to your little place in the corridor between their houses. Yes, as you may or may not know, we have a patron saint of the podcast who we ask every single person that comes on to help us find her someone that can live up to her legacy. Gender is not an issue. Other people, other partners, none of these are issues. We think anyone would step aside to let someone be with the one, the only Cher. Can you find someone to be with Cher?
Oh. That is a tough one, isn't it?
It's a tough one, but it's a fun one.
Because even Cher's having trouble being with herself these days. Like, it's hard to find the essence of Cher physically or emotionally anymore. There's not much of the original left.
She's a concept. Cher is just a concept.
Yeah. I think she'd do really well with John Bishop. I think that would be
bad. Oh my God. That is not one I saw coming. You're sticking with it. Don't change
I'm
the
not
answer.
Changing it.
I'm sticking.
Stick or bust.
That
I'm
is
sticking.
The strangest one we've had.
I'm sticking.
But John Bishop.
What I love about that is I love his next tour show. He goes on stage. He goes, "My wife," and we all know he's talking about Cher.
I love that. Yeah. So there you go. That's what I bequeath to Cher.
Okay. Okay. But wait. I need to break this. So why do you think Cher and John Bishop would work?
Well, opposites attract. So I think they're quite different. They have, you know, he likes a suit and very clean teeth. And
he's not bad looking.
He's not bad looking.
No.
His kids.
I think she likes a laugh.
Yeah, she likes a laugh. Yep. His kids are grown. He's going to need some cosmetic surgery soon. She has the little black book. She's going to say, this is where you need to go to keep those, you know, those 70s good looks. And they both seem to be of another era, another time. And I feel they'd be, I think she'd really like to be backstage when he's doing like one of his arena tours. I think it's I think it's perfect. I think his sons would probably really like her as a stepmom. They wouldn't like her. I think it's good.
You just use the word perfect.
Yeah.
A perfect pairing, John Bishop and Cher.
I think everybody, it's like, I think the whole world has just been waiting for that to happen.
Yeah. Just imagine them having meals at the first Christmas meal. John, get the bistro.
Yeah. It's perfect. They'd have endorsement deals. They'd have advertising, wouldn't they?
Oh, coming out.
I mean, celebrity Googlebox would have better viewing figures than ever.
Oh my God.
They're couple.
This is becoming the perfect answer. You're right.
Their couple name could be Jer.
Chishup.
This is awful. Oh, I love it. Great answer. Thank you for that.
Oh, Callie. I love how it went from out of left field to the most obvious answer.
Yeah,
we landed in the most predictable fashion. I just hope that everybody listening didn't get there before me.
Oh, God. Well, Callie, we've been on a journey. We've stalked your neighbours and we found the perfect perfect love for Cher and for John Bishop. Where can our listeners find you? What have you got coming up?
Well, I hate to mention another podcast, but obviously this is the queen of podcasts. But I have my Namaste Motherfuckers podcast, where I have not yet had Helena Bonham Carter or Tim Burton, but that is where they're going to reunite on my podcast. That's
obviously
coming next year, 2024 season. So I'm doing that. I'm in the process of writing a book, but there'll be more to hear about that soon. And then I'm just doing loads of live stuff, and that's all on my website. So yes, I'm just, doing many, many things.
Kellybeaton.com.
Kellybeaton.com. And I also do a lot of, as anyone knows, I do, who follows me, I do tons and tons of, on Insta in particular, a lot of reels. So my little Insta reels are worth a little follow at Callie Beaton Comedian.
Good to know.
Yeah. So at Callie Beaton Comedian on Instagram and Namaste Motherfuckers for the podcast.
Yes, and my Callie Beaton site has it all on it in one easy
place. It's all on there, guys. Just go there.
Threads, Twitch, Twatch, the whole fucking thing. All on one easy to follow link.
Don't be anybody's muse. Just get on Callie Beaton's website.
There you go. There you go.
The Way They Were is an Amanda Redman production, produced by Abby Weaver and Amanda Redman.
We want to hear your celebrity couple crush, so email us on thewaytheywerepod@gmail.com.
Or find us on Twitter at thewaytheywerepod and we're on Instagram at thewaytheywerepodcast.
Thanks to you for listening. Until the next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.
The way they were.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.